Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting from Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. We have on the phone with us today a very special guest. This is Dr. Carolyn Crocker, president of the American Institute for Technology, Science, and Education, a nonprofit organization with the mission of increasing scientific understanding and integrity. Dr. Crocker taught various biology courses for 5 years at George Mason University and Northern Virginia Community College. While at George Mason, or GMU, she won 3 grants, including one from the Center for Teaching Excellence, received commendations for high student ratings, and wrote a cell biology workbook. Dr. Crocker received her PhD in immunopharmacology at Southampton University in the United Kingdom, and then did postdoctoral research studying the interactions between proteins and a signal transduction pathway involved in the immune system at the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences in Bethesda, Maryland. She received an MSc from Birmingham University and a BSc from Warwick University in the UK. However, what Dr. Crocker has become perhaps most well-known for is the persecution that she suffered while teaching at George Mason University, as told in the documentary Expelled. And in that regard, most recently, Dr. Crocker is the author of a new book, Free to Think, Why Scientific Integrity Matters, published by Leafcutter Press in 2010, where she tells her story of being expelled from George Mason University due to the fact that she taught students about both evolution and intelligent design in her classroom. So, Dr. Crocker, it's an honor to have you on the show with us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Well, I have a feeling that a lot of our listeners know you from the Expelled documentary and know a little bit about your story, but I want to say before we get into this at all that if they read your book, they're going to learn a lot more detail about your story, a lot more interesting aspects and anecdotes from your story that have never been told publicly before. So don't think that you really know the full story of what happened to Dr. Crocker if you simply saw the Expelled documentary. But before we get into that, in this first podcast, I don't want to get into too much about the story of what happened to you at George Mason University. I'd like to just talk about some background and your involvement with Expelled and also talk a little bit about some aspects of your book. I would like to just talk to you briefly. How did you get into studying the science of biology, and how did you get interested in the debate over origins?
Well, I have always loved biology from the time I was very young. I actually started university when I was 16. I went to a community college and got an associate degree in pre-medicine. Then my parents moved to the UK, which is why most of my education is in the UK, despite the fact that I have an American accent, and I know that confuses a lot of people. So I got my bachelor's degree in microbiology and virology because I thought bugs and germs were pretty much the coolest thing out. Then after I had my children and they were at school, I went back to school and I got a master's degree in medical microbiology and finally a doctorate in immunopharmacology. The reason I chose the immune system as what I wanted to do a PhD in is because it felt like the other side of the war. We have the bugs and the germs on one side and our immune system on the other side. And I just thought that would be so interesting to learn about both sides. And in fact, I was right. Well, I began to question the traditional theory of evolution while I was doing my doctorate. And that was actually 20 years after I did my bachelor's degree, because what I understood about evolution did not fit with what I was learning about cell biology. The complex and integrated systems in a cell just did not work with a system of random mutation followed by natural selection. So that got me into the debate in a big way. What I tried to do was teach the traditional theory of evolution in an objective way by teaching both the evidence for evolution that was given in the textbook and then also help my students to think about those experiments and to evaluate them scientifically as to whether they would apply in the way the textbook was suggesting they would. That's what got me into trouble at George Mason.
Now, anyone, Dr. Crocker, who has seen the Expelled documentary knows that your story was one of the various persecution stories told in the documentary. But what was it like being an Expelled? I mean, do you get recognized when you go to the grocery store now?
Well, I think the best thing about Expelled was sitting in the movie theater and looking at the credits roll and realizing I knew every one of those people and that those were my friends. That was just so much fun to have the experience of working with them and then to see their names on a big screen. I also really enjoyed the red carpet premiere, being able to walk down the red carpet to, you know, see Ben Stein there, to wear a nice dress. It was just all a very exciting thing, and I'm glad I had that experience. But as to whether I get recognized in the grocery store, no, I don't. The only person who really thinks I'm a movie star is my husband, and that's just fine with me.
Did being an expelled make you at least feel like someone else appreciated the suffering and the persecution that you endured?
I would say I really didn't suffer that much. I was more in shock than suffering when it all happened. I was just so surprised that approaching science from what I tried to make a very objective stance, helping my students to go beyond memorizing to actually applying their knowledge, thinking about it, evaluating it, questioning it, I was very surprised that that would snowball into what it did, especially when the story went on to my lawyer losing his job as well. It was just a huge shock. It was more than, you know, not really feeling persecuted, but just totally in shock that that's the way the world is. I think probably what helps me a lot is I tend to view life as an adventure, and it's true that this has launched me on paths I never imagined I would take, and I've really enjoyed them. So I would say, yeah, it was tough, but there's been so much exciting stuff that's happened as a result. I'm almost grateful for the experience.
Well, one question I have for you is, since your story was already told in a movie, why did you feel it was important to write a book?
I think that the movie tells a very incomplete story. Frankly, when I interviewed for the movie, I was frightened because I'd only just found out that my lawyer was losing his job, that I'd lost my legal representation, and I did not dare to tell the whole story, so I didn't. But also, because I believe that the suppression of unpopular scientific views and lack of scientific integrity has many more consequences than just one prof losing her job. I believe it has, you know, financial consequences, religious consequences, health consequences, social, and I really want to make a contribution to changing that. I also believe that freedom, which is foundational in our society, requires people to have choices. And if people are not given options, that is, they're not told the whole scientific truth in as much as they can understand it, and most people, I find, can understand if you just explain, then they don't have any choice. And I think it's very important that people are given complete explanations. And that's actually one reason I set up the American Institute for Technology and Science Education, so that people would have an opportunity to hear scientific options and to have a choice. Then thirdly, I wanted to set the record straight. There's a lot of misleading and incomplete information on the internet about my story, and I thought, well, this is a good way to just answer all of it and to put out the letters from the professors and from the politicians and from the students, etc., that prove that what I'm saying is true. Finally, I really, really enjoy students, and I wanted to have an opportunity to inspire other people with their stories. So you know that in my book, I have a lot of stories of my students.
Well, and your point about there being a lot of misinformation about your case out there on the internet is very true, and I think we're going to get into that more later on in this podcast. But I'd like to give a little sneak peek about your book, Free to Think, in that the foreword was written by none other than Ben Stein. How did you feel about having the opportunity to have Ben Stein write the foreword to your book?
You know, in all my interactions with Ben Stein, I have found him always to be very kind and gracious. I was so moved when I emailed him, and he answered me within 24 hours, and in fact, he always does. I'm very impressed by his willingness to face opposition on truth in science. I've seen so much unpleasant stuff about him on the internet. In a sense, it's not even his fight. I mean, he's not a scientist, but of course he is a citizen of our country.
What do you hope that your book will accomplish, and what changes would you like to see in the academic establishment as a result of what you argue in your book?
I would like that for my book to just make a small change that snowballs into a bigger change. Basically, I would love to see more openness and freedom in the academic establishment, more acknowledgement that scientists can be wrong and often are, a bit more humility perhaps, more scientific integrity. Of course, I would want to say that most scientists went into science because they have a desire to find the truth in their area, not because they're terrible people who want to mess us all around. You know, people aren't like that. Well, some are, but, you know, most scientists do have integrity, but on the other hand, they are all human. And financial considerations like, am I going to get a grant? Will I get another grant if I publish this? Do come into it. Peer pressure. Will I get tenure? Guillermo Gonzalez found out, no, you won't, unless you actually bow to the peer pressure. Preconceived ideas. Everybody has them. And that will influence the way one interprets their science. Even religious questions might cause scientists to ignore inconvenient results or overemphasize other results. What I'm hoping my book will do is draw attention to the problem and contribute to a move, actually a current move that I'm seeing in society, to reverse that. I think it's very important for scientists to be able to accurately distinguish between their scientific data, interpretation of that data, and extrapolation from that data. Because if scientists and even the public are treating extrapolation from data as if it is data, that can lead to huge mistakes in science and actually can stop it from going forward as it might.
Well, I couldn't agree more with what you just said. And if you don't mind me sounding off for just a moment, I often hear people asking questions like, well, why do you think that the scientific community is so intolerant of intelligent design? And my response is that I don't think that the scientific community as a whole is necessarily intolerant towards intelligent design. I think there are some folks out there who are very intolerant, but I myself, like you, Dr. Crocker, spent a few years in the scientific community doing research, and most scientists that I interact with, they're great people who just want to go about their work doing the best job that they can. Now, unfortunately, there are some people out there, some individuals who want to create an atmosphere that is very caustic towards intelligent design, and they want to poison the well and poison the environment against ID proponents. But I'm not at all someone who believes that most scientists out there are somehow closed-minded about intelligent design. I think that it's an atmosphere that's created by just a few individuals, and most scientists, they just want to do their research and discover interesting things about nature, and that's the way it's supposed to be. I want to close out this first podcast about your book with a little quote that you make. You open your book by noting your agreement with a statement from President Obama where he says that science is about, quote, letting scientists do their jobs free from manipulation or coercion and listening to what they tell us, even when it's inconvenient, especially when it's inconvenient. It is about ensuring that scientific data is never distorted or concealed to serve a political agenda, and that we make scientific decisions based on facts, not ideology. Do you feel that that sort of a mentality is spreading through the scientific community today? And are you hopeful that that sort of a mentality is going to continue to spread?
Well, I'm certainly hopeful that that kind of a mentality will spread, but I don't think that that environment exists in the scientific community today. And frankly, I wonder if the president would even want that. I mean, after all, he is a politician. I expect most people are aware that science, like most human endeavors, is influenced by politics, financial considerations, power, things like that. And obviously, we can't get rid of all that. But I believe it's important that the public is aware that science is not ultimate truth and that scientists are not gods. Now, you know, most people are going to say, well, we obviously know scientists aren't gods. But if you think about what you see on television where they say scientists agree, experts say, doctors recommend, people just swallow that stuff and they believe it. And I would like it if the public were helped to understand that, no, scientists are not the ultimate bearers of truth and that they can be mistaken. I think that our nation would be a lot healthier physically, financially, etc., if they were to grasp more of that idea. I believe we really need to assess data impartially and not give undue weight to what might be outdated theories. Like, I believe, actually, the theory of evolution is outdated in some ways. Politics, financial considerations, or even religious preferences. We need to assess science on its own merits.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Crocker, for doing this first podcast with us. We'll be continuing on with Dr. Carolyn Crocker, telling the story of what happened to her at George Mason University, and also talking about her new book, Free to Think, Why Scientific Integrity Matters, which is available at Amazon.com. Is that right, Dr. Crocker?
Yes, it will be July 4th.
Great. Well, thank you very much for being on the show with us, and we'll have more with Dr. Crocker in future podcasts. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org. or www.idthefuture.com.